No, no, I'm done. Hit record in case we say something funny before.
Hit record in case we say something funny.
Hit record in case we say something. You never know. Like, stranger things have happened.
Yes, yes. Stranger things have happened. But, hey, I've seen many a strange thing in my time, but nothing quite so as bizarre as this film we're about to talk about. How about that for a segue lead into a podcast without saying hello to anybody?
Well, you know.
Oh, hello, everybody.
Well, hello.
Welcome to the Filmware Podcast. I'm Stephen Hurst, and with me is Sean Kennedy, and today we're talking about a totally bizarre film called Braindead.
Braindead. It's not that bloody bizarre, is it? It's just a bit, you know.
Actually, no. Well, see, I could trip you up there, because the one we were talking about, which is the zombie Peter Jackson movie, Braindead, also known in the North America as Dead Alive.
Which there makes is also all the sense in the world.
Yeah, there's also a film from the early 90s called Braindead, starring Bill Paxton and Bill Pullman from the Roger Corman film studio, and it is completely fucking bizarre.
Well, yeah, if it's Roger Corman, it will be.
Yeah, well, that you kind of like, you know, you might expect, like, you know, something a bit sort of cheap and schlocky, but this one was, it's out there. I think it's probably also on YouTube. You should check out at least a video for it. It is odd. The only reason that I watched it is because it had Paxton and Pullman in it. I was like, hey, yeah, the two Bills that I like, you know, because, like, Pullman I knew from Spaceballs, and Paxton I knew from Aliens, and I was like, hey, they're doing a movie together, and it was just fucking weird film. Yeah. Anyway, we're not talking about that one, though.
We're not, but we are talking about another bizarre B-movie. So.
Yeah, Braindead. I'm so glad, because this is basically Sean's pick for this one. I was like, yeah, we should totally do that.
No, you weren't.
Get talked about.
No, you weren't. You were like, much. No, we're not fucking doing that initially.
No, look, didn't I say I didn't want to do his other one, his other early one? Because it's very well known. Bad Taste.
Bad Taste, yeah.
Although, bizarrely, I've still to this day never seen it all the way through.
No, I haven't either. It was just sort of notorious, wasn't it? It was infamous.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like sort of...
More famous for bits as opposed to actually being any fucking good.
Exactly, yeah. And it definitely sort of did the stylized Video Nasty cover. Everyone's familiar with the cover art to that film, the poster and stuff, but... No, I don't think it's as good as Braindead anyway, so...
Yeah, but this one I did see back in the day on video, but within a couple of years of it coming out, and loved it, you know, kung fu ninja minister, priest, whatever he is.
I kick ass for the Lord.
Yeah, time for some divine intervention.
It's really hard to do the New Zealand accent as well, like properly, you know, because it's just...
if you focus, then you can. You just got to remember to say sex instead of six when you're counting. Yeah,
mental.
They're doing really well at the moment, but prefer the films that are coming out from different companies. I mean, this year alone, we've had Hunt for the Wilder People from Taika Waititi, who is going on to direct the new Thor movie. And previous to that, he did the vampire mockumentary, What We Do in the Shadows, which is also terrific from New Zealand. But then there's also these other small films, like I've seen a few at Fright Fest. There was one in particular called Housebound, which actually features an actress that's in Hunt for the Wilder People, and she's brilliant in both of these films. But there was that, which is a real cracker of a movie. I need to lend that to you because I think you'd really dig Housebound. But generally, as a filmmaking country, they are delivering really, really, really good humoured stuff. It's terrific. So it's not all about Peter Jackson, although this film is directed by Peter Jackson. You know, there's plenty of other talent out there doing really good things, but tend to sort of leaning towards the sort of black humour and the horror side of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's also it's very regional humoured, this film. Like the type of humour that's in it is very, very specific to New Zealand and maybe Australia.
Absolutely.
As well. And,
yeah, it really helps it stick out, but in a good way, I reckon.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think it's one of those things where if you're somebody who doesn't find the humour funny, then you're not going to enjoy the film, but...
Oh, yeah. Well, you're screwed.
Yeah, you are screwed, yeah. Because it's kind of... I don't know how you... Did you hear much about it in the run-up to it, or did you even hear about it before?
A tiny bit. I think someone had told me about... Because the other thing that stands out for me in this film is the lawnmower incident.
Well, of course.
At the end of the film. I think I'd heard a bit about that, but not enough for it not to, you know... Because it really surprised me when it happened. I was like, bloody hell, this is really going for it.
Really,
and that's when you just really start howling with laughter watching it.
Because I didn't think I knew it was a comedy before I watched it. That's the thing. I thought it was, I was expecting sort of Driller Killer, you know, that kind of idea, like Video Nasty kind of, well, more over the top than that, because I knew it had zombies in it. But I was really surprised, because it also has like quite a touching, like, sort of mother-son story with a bit of dark history there, and quite a touching relationship story as well.
Tongue firmly in its cheek
all the way. Yes. Although I was howling with laughter long before the lawnmower scene at the end.
Oh God, yeah. Oh, there's tons of stuff in here. But when I rewatched it, because I hadn't rewatched it in ages, and it took me forever to find it, and I ended up watching it on fucking YouTube. What amazed me is I was literally counting all the different film references, because I know the big deal is that in the first shot, when you see the guy running around with this monkey that he's got in this crate, that it's an area that they went back to. I think you told me this in Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings, the third one. It was the path of the dead in Lord of the Rings.
That's right. So that was on the top of my mind while I was watching the opening sequence. But then I was like, oh, this so just became Raiders of the Lost Ark with the way that they escape.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
When they run away from the natives, and instead of a plane, it's a jeep. And even when they're putting the crate onto the plane, it's then taking off. I'm like, and that is Temple of Doom at the beginning. So, you know, spotting all those references. And also, I think that the place was called Skull Island. And that is a take from King Kong.
Which he would obviously go on to remake. That location was used again in King Kong, in Peter Jackson's King Kong. Yeah,
yeah, I don't doubt it.
Singaya! <Yeah. laughs> I love it. Yeah.
So I was basically just counting all that. Oh, he's got a love for this, he's got a love for that, blah, 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 blah. But not like real obvious sort of stuff that other filmmakers, you know, tend to do. But stuff that's obvious enough. Done in his own quirky little way.
Well, I'll tell you what it doesn't have, though. It doesn't have a Wilhelm scream, does it?
No, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't, no.
Okay.
You would have noticed. You've made me question myself now. No, I don't think it does, no.
Right, good. Oh, I hope not.
I just thought of that because you said, you know, it's nice and refreshing that he's doing like beats and nods to things that you don't often see. And then I thought, Wilhelm Scream is all over the bloody Indiana Jones trilogy.
Yeah, like a little bit of the old stop motion rat monkey, ugly little fucker that it is.
Oh, I like that, yeah. The effects in this are just perfect.
They're terrific, aren't they? I mean, and obviously, I mean, the stop motion, you go, oh, fucking fake, yeah, of course. But some of the blood effects and whether it's people being killed or mutilated are ingenious. It's just the idea of they decided to do that as an idea to hurt someone or kill someone. And that's terrific.
Oh, there's some brilliant slapstick comedy moments involving killings and slaughters and stuff like that that are, you know, straight out of Charlie Chaplin, you know, with the... Right at the end of the film, when the bloody digestive system is alive, and after the hero, and there's one bit where he uses like the something to do with the wiring in the house and the momentum in order to get back, and then that's followed off with like a brutal death scene, and there's some genius bits of moment in there, yeah.
And even the old ninja priest is killing people in inventive ways, ripping limbs off and stuff, and using the limbs to beat other people up.
There's another reference for you as well.
Catastrophically, you know, impales himself on a statue.
I've got no doubt in my mind that the whole pulling the arms off and then knocking the legs off of that zombie character is a nod to the Black Knight in Holy Grail.
Yeah, yeah. So. There is definitely some Monty Python-esque shit going on in here. Definitely. Yeah. It's great. It's terrific. But it's a case of, like, even if someone gets beheaded, that doesn't mean say that it's dead. You know, they'll then discover something to do with the head or the top half of the head, you know, still being alive, getting kicked around the floor or something like that. So it's almost like, you know, you sat in a room with a couple of writers and they just laughed and laughed and laughed and forgot about the story and just went with what was going on in the moment. And that's the great thing about it, because the ending, you know, it's a good half hour sort of end sequence at this sort of party that's going on.
Where all the budget went, no doubt.
Yeah. And it's just terrific with the way they went with it. The actual story itself, yeah, you know, that's kind of cool. I mean, there's a girl who is desperate for love, is clearly just looking for it in any place she can get it, gets told, you know, she gets her fortune told for her, and then that's it for her. That's the guy that I'm going to end up with, and she's all in. And it just happens to be this dorky fucking mama's boy. Hello, Psycho references. Lionel.
Lionel.
Yeah. And then with his overbearing mother, and comedy ensues once the mother gets bit at the zoo by a fucking rodent bloody monkey.
I love the escalation though in the film as well, and I really sort of buy into the idea that, you know, his mum slowly turns into a zombie, and he's such a mummy's boy, he doesn't quite know what to do about that, so he keeps her alive and like a pet, and then comically ends up with more and more of them till he's got a
more
basement
and more
full
of
them,
accumulating them. And I like, you know, because like some of them, you know, he's trying to look after them so they can eat, and one of them like sticks a spoon in its mouth, it goes out the back of its head and it starts gagging like a baby, and he's like, oh, and he's just trying to run around and help them all, and then the bloody priest and the nurse start fucking on the table.
Yeah,
these two corpses, one of them's got a flip top head that's banging up and down. Just absolute mad. I mean, that you can see that kind of sort of humor coming out in Meet the Feebles, you know, the more sort of adult sexy humor, if you want to call it the gross out sexy humor. But it's just absolute fucking madness. But it's good fun. I think the woman is completely dubbed.
You think?
The girlfriend? Yeah.
Paquita.
I wasn't Paquita.
Paquita.
Yeah,
Paquita. Yeah. Don't ask me to say it.
P-A-Q-U-I-T-A, Paquita. Yeah.
Don't ask
Spanish
me to
girl,
say
yeah. Yeah, yeah. It didn't sound like her actual voice on the soundtrack, but you know, whatever. No one's getting any awards for acting in this film, or subtle camera work for that matter. That's the other sort of Terry Gilliam sort of crossover, is that he will stick cameras right in weird angles and then have people lean right into them.
I don't know, the performances. Terrific. I mean, this type of film called for a sort of camped up performances from the actors. So. Yeah, I mean, I still kind of buy into it. There's some hilarious characters, like the uncle who's there to, you know, take his inheritance off him after his mother dies. He's kind of
finds
like
a way to blackmail
villain.
Him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
principal villain, but even he's running around kicking ass and new and in inventive ways at the end of the party until he gets his comeuppance.
I've got a urinary infection, you know. That piss scene always cracks me up. The sound effect.
And his actual comeuppance when he actually gets turned into a zombie by the whatever the hell the mother's turned into, when he gets his head and his spine pulled out of his body, that reminded me a little bit of some of the Brian Usler stuff from Return of the Living Dead Part 3.
That's interesting.
Which is the one with the sexy girl with the red hair. Because I'm pretty sure someone like that happens to someone in that film. Their skull and their spine gets pulled and elevated out of their body.
It reminded me a little bit of The Thing, but it also more than that reminded me of The Witches of Eastwick. What happens to what's his face? Why the hell have I forgotten his name? Nicholas Cage. Yeah, what's Nicholas Cage? Fuck, Jack
Nicholas
Nicholson.
Cage?
Jack Nicholson reminds me a little bit of how he ends up looking at the end of that film, you know. There's some great stuff in here, and I kept watching because I rewatched it today, in fact, just to do this podcast, and I knowing a little bit more about Peter Jackson now, Lord of the Rings and everything, and the fact that he is one of these guys who he's always used the same crew and the same. The same sort of secondary actors. I kept looking for people that might have shown up.
Oh, I saw Richard Taylor on there, who's his, is it production designer or something?
Yeah, the wetter guy.
Richard Taylor.
Richard Taylor. Yeah, his voice is worth worth something on the special feature of Lord of the Rings. Yeah. Vegetables.
Vegetables.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the music? Because I was like, the little love piano theme, which is cute and all, but it kept making me want to go, just one cornetto.
It's fucking awful, isn't it? And it's definitely it's definitely a sync track. It's not, you know, it hasn't been bespokely made for the film. I think it's just like library music that's just been plastered
really?
On. Yeah. When I listen to it, as I watched it today in my studio, so I was listening listening to it on these, like, you know, like £2,500 speakers, and I really noticed how poor the entire audio track was in this film, actually. That and there's definitely, you know, that the audio recording of the music itself just sounds like it's just been sort of slapped on in the edit.
I reckon the film will certainly look pretty good with a good polish.
Yeah,
because the version I watched on, even on fucking YouTube, didn't look too bad. I was like, all right, if they get a decent Blu-ray of this out there, which there might be for all I know, it'll probably look pretty good, especially with all the blood effects that are going on in it.
I've still got my VHS of it, so and it being the type of film it is, it's the type of film I love to watch on VHS still. So, yeah. I don't know.
For sure. What's on the front cover?
It's a close-up of the main character's face.
Covered in blood?
Yeah, covered in blood. It's from the, what do you call it, from the lawnmower scene. It's basically just a close-up shot of that.
Yeah.
So even the, that's what I mean, even the VHS cover, which I picked up, that was the first time I watched it, picked up the VHS and... So even off the back, off the front of that cover, I was like, "Oh wow, this will be like, you know, a kitsch little B movie horror video nasty." And no, it's like hilarious.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know this release poster that we're looking at with the woman pulling her mouth open and the sort of skull creature in it. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, no, neither had I. But I think is that a sort of reference to is? Oh, I'm trying to think of one of the kills. Is that when the little baby one comes out?
It could be a reference
to
that.
It's like the mate who gets bit halfway through the party, but she doesn't turn. You keep waiting for her to turn into one of them, and she never does. But then suddenly the baby sort of comes through her head.
Selwyn, or something, isn't it? The baby. So
what happened to that baby in the end? How did they get rid of that? I can't remember.
I can't even remember what happened to that. But
so much shit going on, keeping track of like everyone that's running around trying to kill him.
It's certainly
like the biker guy that keeps coming back with no legs.
Yeah, well he
who ends up on top of the lawnmower and they have to, like, you know, spin it, but then hold on to his arm so he grinds down into it.
Yeah, that was genius. he was in the graveyard. That's when he gets turned into a zombie.
That's right. Yeah,
and it's his digestive system that gets separated from his body and comes back to life. Yeah. So like he's like the most violent, aggressive zombie out of them.
Because his leg is like, legs are coming after him at one point as well.
But there is one where a guy's sort of, the skin on his face gets pulled off and he's kind of got like a skull, like a Hellraiser looking sort of, and that kind of looks like this.
And when the nurse gets it, you know, you almost expect her face to get pulled off, but then her entire head gets, you know, yanked back.
Yeah. And there's
so many good, great deaths in
here. There's a great, you reminded me when you mentioned the friend who, at the party gets bitten and doesn't turn, and then there's a scene where they're in the kitchen and that guy, the biker guy, comes up behind them and it's like a jump scare moment and his entire fist comes through the back of her head and out of her mouth, and then he's walking around with like this woman on his arm and he's
that's right. And there's the one that gets stuck against the wall with a light bulb.
Yeah, that's surreal looking.
Face is just forever turned on for them, like, the rest of the night. Oh, it's great.
Flickering. It is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, don't expect much in the way of story commentary. You know, in the end, Lionel has to, you know, man up and break free from his family, especially his overbearing mother, who just happens to turn into a giant fucking... What the fuck? I mean... How gross can you get when your mother tries to put you back inside her?
Yeah, yeah.
And we're not talking through the mouth.
No, we're talking in a very expressly mother way.
Yeah, it is just traumatic.
Reverse
what
labor.
What happens to him, yeah. Absolutely fucking traumatic for me just watching it going, oh no, I don't, no one needs to go there.
And the best thing
no
about
one
it is...
go there, best thing ever.
The puppet's like made out of paper mache or something. That's the best thing.
The puppet. I mean, it's just gross and weird. I mean, it wouldn't work half as well if it looked, you know, realistic for a giant.
That's right. And then a few years later,
with giant breasts hanging down as well, with nipples and everything. You're just like, fucking hell.
And a few years later, that idea was totally ripped off in Alien Resurrection. Yeah, I don't know. It's, yeah, there is, the thing is, though, I think we're sort of doing it a disservice to anyone who's listening to this and hasn't seen it, because it does have a really cohesive storyline, and it isn't just another stupid, you know, well, it is, isn't it? But I don't know.
It's completely bonkers, but there's a basic love story there.
And there's a bit of, you know, when Lionel discovers the true fate of his dead father, he's off screen.
Yeah. And hey, all is well that ends well at the end. House burning down in the background, all these dead zombies inside, and the lovers are united together at once. Finally.
Yeah.
Fucking nutcase film, it really is.
I find it really interesting how neither of us have really seen Bad Taste, and that's probably the most well-regarded, well-known
one.
It's
weird because as much as I enjoy good horror comedy, there are things that would put me off it, and I can tell you exactly the thing that puts me off watching this film. It's early on when the mum has become a zombie, but she's not completely... She's not killing people yet. She's falling apart, and she's having dinner, and they've got the two people around the house having dinner with them, and part of her cheek falls off, and then her ear falls off into her soup, which she then eats. That just stuff like that just makes me just want to puke. I was actually, you know, about to go and have lunch after watching this film, or halfway through watching the film, I was like, yeah, I'm not eating anything now.
I mean, I know exactly what you mean, because I don't really like the idea of seeing anyone eating custard anyway. You know,
yeah, there you go.
Let alone without
someone else's blood dripping into it.
Yeah, like a pussy welt that she burst into it. Yeah.
Yeah, disgusting.
But even that scene had me in stitches, though. Like when she's sort of, when the mother's half dead and she's like, meeting! Formal meeting!
Yeah.
Nice skit, we go, yeah. It's hilarious.
Peter Jackson cameos as the Undertaker's assistant. Oh, I didn't notice him.
Yeah, he's the really kind of the wrong'un one, basically. That's another one. When Lionel goes to pick up the tranquilizer, that character there, you know, the he's meant to be like a Latvian immigrant or something, and he's just bloody hilarious. like literally, I think that's like a bit of a nod to How I Love to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. You know, the,
all right.
Yeah. What's the shorter hand title for that bloody film?
Doctor Strangelove.
Doctor Strangelove, yeah, of course. Because that there's a bit of a parallel there between the sort of former Nazi scientist in that film and this character. There's just too many great moments in this film. I'd forgotten how good it was, to be honest with you, when I watched it again.
No, today. So had I. Certainly a lot of the stuff that happens in the middle, because I remembered the beginning and then that, you know, long run towards the end. I'd forgotten about all the good stuff in the image. And obviously the bit in the graveyard. So it was a good fun revisiting it again.
So the question is, definitely. Do we think that... sorry, I already told you I'm bloody knackered. Do we think that Peter Jackson is ever going to revisit... Should we just say sort of like dark humoured horror?
Does he need to finish his trilogy?
Yes, but he needs to do it.
Bad Taste and then this.
He needs to do it with these production values. He can't do it now out of his ivory tower workshop.
He's not only become a big hotshot, but also a family man in the meantime, I think. Yeah. So who knows where his interests lay, but I reckon he's got it in him. I think he's still got that sense of humour about him. All right, we didn't see any of it in the Hobbit movies, but I think after he's had a couple of years to really fucking relax, then maybe he'll go, right, let's do something for fun.
Yeah, I hope so.
Taking things so seriously. Because, I mean, King Kong, it took way too seriously, and The Lovely Bones as well. It is time for him to have a bit of low-budget fun with his mates. But... we shall see. I've got no idea what he's working on at the moment.
I don't either. No.
But I have absolutely no idea.
Thinking about sort of parallels, you've got Sam Raimi, who's had a very similar kind of start and then rise to, you know, Hollywood blockbuster.
And he kind of went back the way when he did Drag Me to Hell.
That's right.
Which was a bit more back what he was used to doing. And then he, you know, helped reboot the Ash in Ash versus the Evil Dead TV show.
That's right.
I think he only directed like the pilot, but I think he certainly wrote the the storyline for it, which was then fleshed out by other writers to make it 10 episodes. And that worked out pretty well. Yeah. That worked out very well, in fact. So I'm looking forward to seeing season two.
Yeah.
So, this, yeah, I don't think that Peter Jackson has lost any sort of creativity. He just did the wrong last project.
I think even he didn't want to do it, did he? We talked about that.
Yeah,
anyway,
well, exactly. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I think he will certainly do horror related things in the future. He's always had his you know, at least one toe in that well. So
yeah,
who knows? I know we might get another Tintin movie, which he produced the first one that Spielberg directed.
That's right, yeah.
I thought they were going to swap jobs, so he would do the next one. But
that was on the cards, yeah. But I haven't heard anything about that for a while.
Yeah.
What was the one he did after Braindead? Was that Frighteners or Meet the Feebles?
After the Frighteners, after Braindead, he did Heavenly Creatures.
Heavenly Creatures,
which was a bit more serious with Kate Winslet and Melanie Lynskey. And then he did the Frighteners, and then
Kate Blanchett. Don't you mean
Kate? No, Kate Winslet. Kate
Winslet.
That's what put Kate Winslet. Even though it was a New Zealand movie, it put Kate Winslet pretty much on the map, and believe helped her get the role in Titanic.
Yeah, I'd heard something along those lines. Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, had Peter Jackson done something with Kate Blanchett before Lord of the Rings?
I'm sure that I don't know.
That's why I've got mixed up there. And he did do Frighteners, didn't he? He did Meet the Feebles and Frighteners.
Yeah, Meet the Feebles, I think, was before this. I think Meet the Feebles was like about 90 or 91.
Mm.
But I'm looking it up, and yeah, Meet the Feebles was 89. In fact, Bad Taste 87, Meet the Feebles 89, and then Brain Dead in 92, then Heavenly Creatures 94, and then something called Forgotten Silver in 95, whatever the hell that is.
Which has been forgotten.
Yeah. Oh, it's a mockumentary directed by Peter Jackson and somebody else, and it's only 50 minutes long, so it's not a feature. So yeah, so then after Heavenly Creatures, The Frighteners, then Lord of the Rings, then King Kong, Lovely Bones, and then the Hobbit movies. So yeah, he's been a busy man.
Yes, he has. Come on, Peter Jackson, come back to us. Give us another horror film. Come on.
Yeah, is it worth mentioning any of it? Because we've obviously reviewed the Lord of the Rings pictures. So we may as well finish this one off by mentioning the others that we've seen. So we both haven't seen Bad Taste, so we can't really rate that. Have you seen Meet the Feebles?
Not for a very, very, very long time.
And yeah, me too.
If it had an effect on me, I would have definitely owned it on VHS, given the time that I was buying a lot of VHS. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, skip that one. Heavenly Creatures?
Again, I don't think I've seen it. I might have caught it on telly, but...
I did see it not too long ago, again in its entirety, and it was fine, but I'd probably give it like 3.5, I think. The Frighteners.
Yeah, I've seen that one. I remember when that one came out. I think I saw it on release, and that was like 97, wasn't it, or 96, somewhere like that.
96.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was
Jeffrey
all right.
Jeffrey Combs.
Yeah, that was. Yeah. I might have to revisit that one again. I'd say from memory, I would just play it safe and give it a 3, but...
It's an easy 4 for me, because I remember this being the last big thing that I saw Michael J. Fox in, and he was terrific in it. Great sense of humor. It was very funny, and it was kind of like, you're like, oh, this must be done by someone that knows the guy that done the Addams Family Who Framed Roger Rabbit. You know, it had that sort of sensibility about it, and it was terrific. With some really, really cool supporting actors like Dee Wallace Stone from E.T. Jeffrey Combs is the fucking nutcase agent. Jake Busey playing a bad guy, and so on and so forth. It's an easy 4 for me. I think it's a really strong film, and it stands up.
Excellent.
And interestingly, has Sean Astin's adoptive father, John Astin, as a ghost. the old cowboy ghost, that's John Astin, who used to be the lead of the Addams Family TV show.
I'll have to give that a look then. I'll add that one to the list.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and then obviously we've done... Well, actually, The Lovely Bones, I would give a 2 because it bored the hell out of me, and I would also give a 2 to King Kong because it also bored the hell out of me.
Yeah. King Kong, I have to agree, really. I did think it had things in it that were good, that were worthy, but it was actually Jack Black that killed it for me, that film. Like, if I'm trying to think of like one thing that ultimately done the damage, it was that.
It was just long and bloated. I don't think there's a great way of doing it. I just don't think I'm a great fan of that story. Because I've seen all the versions of it, and the one that I like the most is the one that people hate the most, I think, which is the one made in the 70s with Jeff Bridges. Jeff Bridges with that amazing fucking beard. you know, that beard pretty much contends with the one that Kurt Russell had in The Thing. But and I liked that film because the opening of it felt like it was being... It was made in like a classy Hollywood movie. You know, watch it like, oh, this is like feels like a movie from the 50s or the 60s in that, you know, rich colour.
Well, that was the problem, you know. King Kong was trying to go for that. But it ended up coming across like a sort of a facsimile, a bad one at that.
Yeah. But but his one, it didn't have any of that because it was all bloody CG sea and CG skies in the background.
It's fucking awful. I mean, you know, the scene with the dinosaurs in that film now has gone down in history as some of the worst CG we've ever seen. I mean, that's right up there with the Star Wars prequels.
That was meant to be a bloody selling point, wasn't it? Yeah. Never mind.
What a fall from grace, though. Yeah, no, it's a two from me as well. To be honest, it's a one. I'm never going to watch it again, and I can't recommend it to anyone, so it's a one, yeah.
Wow.
Avoid at all costs, yeah.
Wow, well, we can't argue with that. So what would you give Braindead, then?
It's easily a four, and you know, back in the day, it probably would have been a five. But no, I'll be nice, it's 4.5 for me.
I'm going to say 3.5, I'm going to dock it. Half a mark off the four. I was going to give it for that just that thing that I mentioned last that just grosses me out.
For the thing that grossed you out. That's a shitty reason for docking a half a star.
And it's a horror film, and I'm gross. I like a horror film to frighten me, but not in the sense that it makes me not want to watch the film ever again. It's one thing to frighten someone. It's another one to freak them out or gross them out.
No.
If you showed me a film and it was just all fucking spiders, I'd be like, congratulations, you scared the fuck out of me, but I'm never watching that again. One star.
There's Arachnophobia. Do you remember that film from the 90s or the late 80s?
God, don't you start talking about it again. We were having movie night earlier in the year, and we've been battling, because we normally do it by year. We pick a year, and then we pick movies from the year that we want to watch. And we were doing 1990, and we were like, yeah, finally, we can watch Predator 2. the amount of people that I know that can quote that movie, like myself, is just hilarious. It's such an underrated movie. And because these guys had come to learn of my... condition with spiders, they said, yeah. Well, hey, Arachnophobia is 1990, Stephen, we can put that on as well. But luckily I managed to sidestep it, so I haven't watched it again. But yes, even though it's a film that has a fucking rubber spider on a string being dragged past the camera, that still freaks me out.
Yeah, well, I remember that film being quite effective for what it was when I was young and impressionable. So at the time,
Frank Marshall directed it. Spielberg's producer. He's done all right as a director. He did Alive, was his first film, I think. But then
that
plane crash,
a true story. Yeah,
that's right. Then he did Congo. Say what you will about that, but I quite enjoyed Congo when it came out.
It was all right. Yeah.
Bruce Campbell cameo at the beginning. I think Arachnophobia was his second movie.
I think we should stick Arachnophobia on the film club list.
Well, how is that going to work if I don't watch it?
I'm just trying to, just winding you up. But I got one more question, and I'm not rubbing salt in the wound, but you know, we talked about The Mist, which we both really loved. I mean, how did you get on with that one scene in that? Because that's fucking horrible.
Well, you say one scene. There are plenty of them around in the rest of the film as well, jumping on cars and stuff. But the scene in particular that I know you're referring to, that's pretty rough to watch. And I don't know what's worse, in colour or black and white.
Yeah, I still haven't watched the black and white version. I mean, I have to say, in that film, I generally found like the monsters and the deaths and stuff like that pretty bloody gross anyway. And that's without a fear of spiders or anything like that. But that spider scene was fucking horrible. Yeah, so I wouldn't gross. I wouldn't hold that against you if you didn't.
But oh yeah, you wait till you watch the black and white version. It's pretty cool. Because any scenes where the CG looks a bit ropey, yeah. that all disappears. It yeah. all looks real.
yeah.
So yeah.
Well.
Great. Glad we got to finish on that point. Fucking bugs.
Finished on a high point. Yeah.
yeah. So there we go. So that's another film club out the way with me and Sean. Fill in another gap, everybody. We'll be back with something bigger sooner.
Very soon.
Fuck that means.